To get to Joe Minter's house, you drive southwest out of Birmingham, Alabama, toward the old steel town of Bessemer, 10 minutes away. Past junkyards and metal recyclers, past warehouses recycling themselves into rust and dust, until you reach a dead-end street going up a hill, with a little Baptist church at the bottom and Minter's house at the top. Where the pavement ends, Minter's art begins. A half acre filled with reflections on God and gratitude, disaster and resilience. The African village in America, he calls it. A 400-year history of the Black American experience, welded together from old crutches and car parts, and broken dolls and shovels and shoes and chains. On a windy day, you hear the collective creak of it, shuddering in the breeze. And someone practicing the saxophone. Outside, there's Joe Minter's pickup truck, with the American flag on one side and a black doll lashed to a pair of crutches on the other. The words, Love, Heal, Peace, USA, painted on the tailgate. And there's Joe, tall, lanky, wearing a Jamaican-style knit cap, holding an 8-foot staff dripping with bells, belts, dolls, keys that jingle as he leads you through the yard. No hello, no small talk, just an implied, follow me.
And what it is a gift to the next generation that's about to be robbed of their history. And you can't go nowhere without taking history and add it up where the mistakes were made. So you won't make no more mistakes.
Minter has been building his African village for decades, turning scrap into sculpture, painting signs like God Got Whole World, H-O-L-E, in his hand. Right above, Officers, I Can't Breathe, 846.
Oh, wow. See, God said, I give you the sky. I give you the earth, and I keep the earth warm for you.
Yeah.
I give you all that you can work with. Just go out there and be what you call in the vineyard. The whole wall ain't nothing but just walking through what we've been through.
There's a monument to school shootings, a row of chairs with children's shoes and a Harry Potter stuffy on them. A monument to 9/11 of a gloved hand reaching out of a pile of scrap. And ones to wildfires in New Mexico and the tsunami in Japan. And more than one slave ship. Rows of nails pounded into wood, representing people. Bleached out conch shells, representing the ocean.
For some reason, God put upon me to be able to say, I'm a maker of slave ships.
For a long time, as Minter built all this, people thought of it as something other than art. Some people called it a yard show, once a popular form of expression around the Deep South. Some people called the cops. And then things changed. Minter's first slave ship, made in 1995, is now in the collection of the New Orleans Museum of Art. A piece called 400 Years of Free Labor is in the Metropolitan Museum of Art in New York. Two of his works are in the Minneapolis Institute of Art. Jane Fonda toured his yard and bought some work, though Minter isn't sure if she still has it. Minter is 81 now, with no close family left, nowhere to put his village if it can't stay here. It may take a village to save the village. A few years ago, a group from the University of Alabama used a drone to document every square foot of the yard so the whole show could be digitally reproduced.
The drone, and took that whole thing. That's been mapped and stuff. And here come Auburn University.
Minter indicates with his hands just how much paperwork has been created to save this place,
as
if he can't quite believe what's happened.
So we about that thick. I can turn it over to them.
This is the Object Podcast, produced by the Minneapolis Institute of Art. The object is made possible by generous support from Ameriprise Financial, a proud supporter of the Minneapolis Institute of Art and committed to the future of art and culture in the communities they serve. Ameriprise Financial, helping people feel confident about their financial future since 1894. Today, a story of one man taking on a whole world of trouble. A story of insiders and outsiders, and what happens when they meet. This episode is part of an audio catalog for the special exhibition, Black Codes, Art and Post-Civil Rights, Alabama. Now showing at the Jewel Collins Smith Museum of Fine Art at Auburn University, featuring the work of Joe Minter and three other artists from the Birmingham area, Thornton Dial, Lonnie Holly, and Ronald Lockett, including work from the Minneapolis Institute of Art. I'm Tim Gearing. Joe Minter is born in 1943 in Birmingham, when people call it the Magic City, because everything needed to make steel is right nearby. Limestone, coal, iron ore, and cheap labor. The city is prospering. One of those company towns you see in old photos but can't quite believe, with the company houses all in a row and the smokestacks behind them. Your whole life right there in a one-mile radius, like magic. But Birmingham in the early 20th century is also one of the most strictly segregated cities in the country, right? Enforced with violence, so that it also becomes known as Bombingham. 17 unsolved bombings between 1956 and 1963, basically Minter's teenage years. 50 cross burnings, a lynching. Minter talks about the books in the black schools being hand-me-downs from the white schools, out of date and falling apart. He talks about trying to get his driver's license and being harassed by the officer testing him. Back up. Go forward. Whoa, boy, you're speeding. Going maybe 20 miles an hour. The night before his high school graduation, around 2 o'clock in the morning, the police kick down the door of the Minter house and drag Joe and his parents and his siblings out and take Joe and his brother somewhere so that he has to watch as his brother is beaten around the head. 4 years later, in 1965, Minter is drafted at the height of the Vietnam War. And by now, he's so disillusioned with his country and his life that he tells his mother, "I won't be back. Because I won't be killing. These people didn't do anything to me. I'm just going to let them blow me away." Well, Minter isn't blown away in Vietnam, right? He doesn't go to Vietnam. He serves stateside, learning welding and other mechanical skills. And when he gets out, he works in an auto body shop and a metal shop, and finally in construction. But by the late 1970s, his eyes are starting to go bad, possibly because of all the dust and, frankly, asbestos that he's working with. He's diagnosed with glaucoma. And then the company closes down in 1979. Minter is only like 36 years old, but he's basically done having a regular job. He works some odd gigs for the next 10 years or so, but nothing really clicks. He describes himself as just kind of wandering around. But he does start to develop a philosophy about America. He sees the races as drifting further apart, people becoming more isolated from each other and their history. America, he says, had started to lose the family, and when the family is lost, that is the end of all of us, here as a people. So, around 1989, he asked God for help. "Help me find a way to bring people together. Some way to create understanding." And God says, "Okay, make art." In the late 1980s, the city of Birmingham is moving toward building a civil rights museum. And Minter worries that institutionalizing this history will water it down, focus on the leaders and not the others. So he makes his art to honor the othered, the outsiders. And he makes it using trash, the rusty detritus of an old steel town, because it's everywhere and it's free. But also, he says, because these things have been discarded and overlooked, just like black people. And when he welds them together, he gives them purpose. I want to show that what is invisible, thrown away, he says, could be made into something. So it demonstrates that even what gets thrown away, with a spirit in it, can survive and grow. If many of his works are about disasters, man-made and natural, well, bad things happen to good people. That's the struggle. And they're going to keep happening, he thinks, until we get right with each other and God. Asteroids and killer bees, boll weevils and tapeworms and nuclear war. But some of these disasters are more personal. Minter was 20 years old when the bomb went off at the 16th Street Baptist Church in Birmingham, killing 4 black girls and injuring many others. Minter ran to the scene. He remembers the hole in the wall and the ambulances that he says weren't taking any black people. Sometimes back then, in the segregated city, hearses from black-owned funeral homes were used as ambulances, whether the victims were dead or not. And that's what Minter remembers. Everyone waiting around for the undertakers. He's made at least 2 pieces about that day in 1963. One at the Minneapolis Institute of Art from 1998, he made from old wood and rusty nails, forming 4 crosses 6.5 feet tall. Another at the Village, he made of wire bent into faces and fastened to the back of 4 folding chairs with no seats. Another chair, larger and throne-like and white, sits in the middle of them, with the wire face of Martin Luther King Jr. A sign reads, "Racism, Hate, USA, 1963, 4 girls, kill, church, bomb." With another sign nailed to it that just says, "Why?" When bad things happen, Minter says, he works it out through his art. I want to go back to 1979, about a decade before Minter has his vision, when, also in Birmingham, Lonnie Holly begins making art. In Holly's telling, his mother had 27 children, and he was the 7th. And he was informally adopted by a woman who traded him to another woman for a pint of whiskey. He ends up in juvenile jail, and then digs graves, picks cotton, works as a cook at Disney World, before eventually settling on his own acre of land on the outskirts of Birmingham. And one day in 1986, he gets a visit from Bill Arnett. Bill Arnett is this guy from Georgia who becomes an art and antiques dealer in the 1960s, traveling the world for mostly European and Asian art. And then in the 70s, he slowly becomes aware of the art right there in his home region by African Americans. In 1986, Holly is living on an overgrown hill near the Birmingham airport. You can't see his house from the road, but you can see his art, like these sculpted heads sitting on boulders and a wooden cross hanging on a screen door suspended in the yard. Stuff made out of basketball rims and umbrellas and suitcases. Arnett walks up to his door, the door to his house, and says, "Mr. Holly, I've been all over the world, and I've never seen anything like this." Holly remembers Arnett saying something about a temple he'd visited, how his art was just as fantastic. "It ain't easy for a man to trust another man," Holly would later say. "It ain't easy for a black man to trust a white man." But Holly does trust Arnett eventually. Arnett not only gets Holly's art as a buyer, he seems to get it. It was like this white man's mind and this black man's mind had the same thoughts going on in them, Holly says. My thing and his thing was altogether the same. The next year, in 1987, Holly brings Arnett to the home of Thornton Dial, yet another Birmingham artist making visions out of the scrap of the city. The two men find Dial to be somewhat guarded. He isn't sure what they're talking about when they talk about making art, if that's what he's doing. And so, Holly finds a little piece of wire and a metal ring and a fishing lure and some turkey feathers and quickly produces a kind of pocket-sized sculpture of a woman. Dial is like, if that's art, then I'm going to show you some art. Arnett will later claim that he didn't tell Dial when he saw his work, this is art. He said, this is the greatest art in this stinking country. In any case, shortly after they meet, Arnett returns to Dial's house and pitches him again. Mr. Dial, he says, people value cultures according to how well they make art. And nobody believes black Americans are capable of making great art. You can become one of the most important artists in the world and make everybody realize they were wrong. You can bring civil rights to people in ways that Martin Luther King didn't live to do. And Dial replies, man, if I'm that good, they'll have to kill me. Sometime in the early 1990s, Holly introduces Arnett to Minter. Holly's daughter had gone to a funeral near Minter's place and looked up and saw something on the hill that she thought her dad should check out. So he did, and by the time he introduces Arnett to Minter, he's already worried about the fate of Minter's village. Holly was forced to move by the airport authority, which used eminent domain to claim his land for a runway. He didn't wish the same for Minter. Arnett buys some of Minter's works and brings them into the same fold as Holly and Dial, and eventually the quilters of G's Bend, whom he discovered one day in rural Alabama after seeing a photograph of a quilt and driving out to find the maker. In 2002, when Arnett persuades the Museum of Fine Arts in Houston to display the G's Bend quilts he's acquired, and the exhibition travels to New York and Milwaukee and Memphis and Boston and Atlanta, and just keeps going. Nothing is the same for any of them. People see these quilts and the sculptures by Minter and Dial and Holly and start hitting the back roads of Alabama themselves. Minter puts a chain-link fence around his yard and hangs a sign out front. Thank you, God, for the Holy Ghost faith, vision, and dream in 1989 to be a worker in this vineyard built by your hand, my Lord, thy God, in love and peace to open thy children's eyes. Amen. He starts writing down his thoughts on his art and black history and the end times that are beginning now with the killer bees and asteroids. And in 2005, he publishes his manifesto / field guide to his yard show with the help of Arnett and his sons. And he sells the book at his house for $27.77. There's a sign on the gate now that says, do not enter, look from street. But Minter has no idea who I am when I turn up, and he starts showing me around anyway. Starting at the end of the road, where the pavement turns to grass and then to gravestones. Minter's property is surrounded by cemeteries, running for a mile down the hills to the south and west. Two historically black cemeteries, which have fallen more or less into disrepair. And now it's hard to see the boundary between the dead and Minter, which is how he likes it. He shows me the grave of a Buffalo soldier just outside his yard, and the graves of his father and his brother, and his wife, who died a couple of years ago and is buried basically behind the house. He shows me his own plot next to hers, his name already on the marker. These people, he says, of the dead, are his 100,000 ancestors. At one point on our tour, he says, "Take a seat." And I sit down on a kind of hanging bench he's made out of wire. "Now look out there," he says, and sweeps his hand toward the freed slaves and the steelworkers, the muscle behind the magic. And he tells me the story of Jesus carrying the cross to Golgotha, or his story of it anyway, a story of strength in the face of oppression, of grace under pressure.
Jesus dropped the cross. He handed it to one that looking like me probably, and what happened is, he know he could carry the burden, so he handed it off to him because he couldn't take it to the hill of old Calvary. So what he did, he drug it. And as Jesus, as he sat down, Jesus picked up, he looked at him and said, "I'm going to give you the enduring last part of what you already are, which is God, love, and peace." Jesus said, "From now on, you will use and have upon you a manner of forgiveness." That's the secret of us can take all that we have took for all of these years and still being attacked. Jesus gave us by touching that cross and atoning for us that thing called forgiveness, the secret weapon. There ain't no other people that have went
through. No other people went through what we went through, he says, and came through with forgiveness in their hearts.
Yeah. Yeah. Secret weapon.
A couple of years ago, a group in Birmingham began getting funds to relocate artworks from Minter's property to an old warehouse, a space the size of an airplane hangar. And there they are, a few dozen sculptures lined up like terracotta warriors, including another slave ship, this time with a little statue of the Virgin Mary at the prow and a big iron cross and a sign that says, "Slavery, why?" There's a sculpture, too, that would seem to be Bill Arnett, with a bicycle wheel for one arm and a pitchfork for another. "Thank God for William Arnett knocking at door over 20 years," reads the sign. "African artists, humanity, thank you." The sculptures seem to be waiting for something to happen, someone to decide what their worth is, what it means to see them here and not there. But Minter knows what he's made. He's never had any doubts about that, or the value of it. "Art," he says, "is the one way man can have a common thread that would connect the hearts of all people. Art is for universal understanding. There is no insider or outsider art, because art is one. All that we know, all that we have been, can be explained in art." And yet, the last yard show is clearly something different without the yard, or its showman. As the sun begins to set at Minter's place, he brings a drum to the deck of his house and begins to play it with what looks like a wooden spatula. "To connect to the ancestors that go all the way back to the root," he says, "I'm asking permission to use you, to send a signal from heart to heart, from here to the world, and to give my people a time to rest." This has been the Object Podcast, produced by the Minneapolis Institute of Art and made possible with support from Ameriprise Financial. I'm Tim Gehring. We're just getting started with Season 6, with new episodes every month. Please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. Subscribe now so you never miss an episode. And thanks very much for listening.